From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
We are not alone. No, not even on that rare evening when the family's out and you're settling in with your favorite snack food and the just-released season of some streaming video. You've got company. Lots and lots of company, like flies and spiders, beetles and ants, mostly unseen perhaps, but company nonetheless. Now, maybe it's because my name is Roach, or because I live in a very old house in a rural area into which I stuff a ridiculous number of plants each winter after summering them outdoors, bringing many other living things in along with them. But for whatever reason, in January, I was delighted and fascinated reading a new scientific study published by a team of entomologists at North Carolina State University who surveyed homes in or near Raleigh to try to get some sense of just how diverse their indoor microbiomes might be. Wait till you hear. The study is called Arthropods of the Great Indoors, Characterizing Diversity Inside Urban and Suburban Homes, and its lead author, Dr. Matthew Bertone, is my guest today. Welcome to Away to Garden, Matt. How are you?
Thank you for having me. I'm well. Thank you.
I'm so glad to speak. This is an area of great fascination for me, so thanks for the study.
No problem.
So first, let's just tell people, when you're not IDing arthropods in local homes, can you tell us what your sort of job is there at NCSU?
Yes, so my job is actually to identify arthropods from homes, but also from plants out in gardens and from commercial buildings. Any type of critter that needs to be identified, I do. And so we have a clinic where you can send in sick plants, and we can see if there's an insect or if it's something else that's affecting it.
Well, okay, I'll be mailing you. No, I'm teasing. I won't be mailing you a million things today. But I guess maybe when I said first tell us that, I should have perhaps even prefaced it by saying, first, can you tell us what an arthropod is? Because I think, and I suspect that some organisms that do come to you, as you just mentioned, there are plants and so forth, things that come make their way to your lab are not arthropods. But what's an arthropod?
Exactly, yes. So arthropods are basically a group of invertebrates that has a number of characteristics, including an exoskeleton, a hard exoskeleton, jointed legs, and body in segments. And so this includes familiar things like insects, spiders, scorpions, ticks, centipedes, and even some things we like to eat from the ocean, like crabs and lobsters and such.
Okay.
Now, things like worms and slugs are not arthropods.
Okay. So now we've got that established, who you are and who arthropods are. So the study, what did you do and how was it different from sort of past studies, or were there past studies on the subject?
Well, so I don't think there were any past studies that looked at this overall diversity, and none that sampled as thoroughly as we did, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And really, there have been a few studies that use small sampling techniques or focused on one pest species in, say, apartments or things like that. But we decided that we wanted to go into freestanding homes all around the area. And basically, we went into the homes, trained entomologists, and surveyed each and every room and crawled around and looked around and collected every single thing arthropod we could find, dead or alive.
So you just used a word, you said pest species, that some pest studies focused on that. And that's an important difference, isn't it? And that's really where most of the data has been up till now, no? That it is about, like, oh, termites or, you know, things that people think of as pests, and an industry has sort of sprung up around that. But this wasn't just those, was it?
Of course, yeah. Now, we, you know, people are, of course, interested in knowing more about pests because they are affecting our lives, and we want to know how better to control them and understand more about them in our homes. But, yeah, this study, we focused on every arthropod. If it was an arthropod, we counted it. And so it didn't have to be a pest. It didn't even have to be living in the home the whole time. We, in fact, many of the specimens we collected were just accidental invaders or just kind of stopping by, and if they didn't make it out of the house, they often died. And so we basically quantify, or we identified the diversity of everything that we could find.
So I should ask, did you Did you like test drive this in your own homes, you and your entomologist, other colleagues? Did you like? How did you figure out the protocol, like by doing it in your own house first, or?
So yeah, we had a number of people close to us, scientists, you know, but still ranging in how they behave in homes, that volunteered their homes as well, along with the public. We sampled my home. The first home we sampled was kind of the test run, and we did a pretty good job of it, but we learned a few things, like that we needed knee pads because we were crawling around a lot on hard surfaces and our knees were screaming at the end. Unfortunately, my home did not have as much diversity as many of the other homes, and I don't know why, but still, we enjoyed doing that.
So when you set out to do this, did you have a guess at the number of species, or maybe it's not literally species, but the diversity that you would encounter? Did you have a guess? Was there like an office pool, so to speak? Or how did it compare what you actually found?
So, yeah, we didn't really, this wasn't very much hypothesis-driven, and so we didn't have a hypothesis at first to say, okay, we think there are this many species. We had an idea of what types of organisms would be living in homes or could be, or that we would find in homes, maybe, if we had to guess, but nobody ever asked us that, and we kind of went into this blind, and we're really concerned with just seeing what we found. And kind of an exploratory study. And we had no idea that we would collect the over 10,000 specimens that we did and so much diversity.
10,000 specimens in just 50 freestanding homes.
At least 10,000 specimens. We also did not survey for abundance. So we were looking only at diversity, so we didn't count every specimen.
Okay.
So we had at least 10,000 specimens, possibly much more.
And the range of, and again, I'm not sure if I'm using species maybe, isn't the exact right number, but how many, is it morpho species? What was it that you called them?
Yeah. So we call it morpho species because a number of groups are very difficult to identify, even if you have a perfectly nice specimen. And other specimens were just, you know, a head or something else that we knew was different from what else was in there, but we couldn't tell what species it was. And so basically, morpho species are kind of a way to estimate, and because I was doing the identifications, I think they were pretty close to what you might estimate. But basically, we found at least 579 morpho species across the entire study, probably more. And we found, and that's a very conservative estimate.
Right.
And we found on average a conservative number of 93 morpho species per house.
Per house.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. Not if it were my house, because my house is like a zoo for for insects for all kinds of things. But fascinating. And so, what was the sort of majority of this diversity? What groups, of arthropods were the best represented?
Yeah, so like I said, a lot of these specimens were kind of accidental arthropods, but there was a core group of arthropods that we know live in homes, and we were surprised to find how abundant they were, at least, you know, how many rooms they were present in. Again, we didn't count the number of individuals, but, you know, we can say yes or no, it was in a room. Now, the groups that were the most common were flies, then spiders, beetles, then wasps, and a couple other groups trailing off from there. Some of the groups were just not as diverse. There was only maybe one or two species ever, and we may know the species really well. Basically, some groups like cobweb spiders were found in 100% of homes and over 65% of rooms.
Wow.
Carpet beetles also are well known to live in homes. We found them in over 100% of homes, or in 100% of homes and over 50% of rooms.
Wow.
And in fact, lately, because of springtime, I've been seeing the adults in my home right now, and this is when people may notice them more, but they've got the larvae living there as well.
Now, and ants are... when you say wasps, is it wasps and their kin? Is that, were ants in there?
Yes, and ants made up the largest proportion of the hymenoptera, the wasps, the bees, and the ants.
Okay.
And so the majority of things, ants themselves, the family, were found in 100% of homes, I think, and were very common. Of course, they don't live their entire life in the home, unless it's, say, a carpenter ant that's living in the structure of the home. Otherwise, these ants are kind of nesting outside or very close by and kind of scouting out and entering the homes for food and water.
So, okay, so then you're starting to get to the, like, why are they in our homes? And some of them, as you mentioned, were kind of just passing through, so to speak, and happened to be there when you were sampling or whatever and got trapped or what, you know, they weren't living in it the way the carpenter beetle that you just, or carpenter ant that you just mentioned. So I found it interesting that, and I love the word, and I'll probably mispronounce it, it's synanthropic, synanthropic, or is it thropic? I don't know.
I would say synanthropic.
Okay,
but,
synanthropic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So these insects, these arthropods that you found are not synanthropic. They weren't there because they've evolved to find like a niche living with us. Am I oversimplifying?
No, that's exactly correct. You know, there were a few groups like gall midges and non-biting midges that are very common out in the environment, and they're flying around in the air. They're attracted to lights or things, but they do not want to be on our home. They can't survive in there. The gall midges, for example, very tiny flies, about a millimeter or two long. Most of them live in plants. A few of them feed on fungi or live in decaying logs, but the majority of them live in plants, living plants, and really not in even house plants typically. They're going to be ones out in nature. So they were just flying around in the environment. They happen to get inside and die, and we were there to collect them.
Right. So, you know, I love bugs or whatever. I know most of them that we're talking about are not true bugs, but I'm not like Annie Hall, you know, calling Woody Allen in the middle of the night to kill a spider in the shower. I'm more like, hey, how are you? Who are you? I wish they could talk and could tell me, because I'm not so good at keying everybody out. I try, but obviously it's a big world, a diverse world. So I'd like to, you know, ask you about some that either I see a lot in my home or that people ask me about that they see. We've talked a little bit about ants, which you say were in virtually every home surveyed.
Yeah.
But fruit flies, that's another one. Where in the world do they come from?
Yeah, they seem to show up out of nowhere. They're a very interesting group. Basically, since they're so small and they're very highly attuned to the smells that they like, they're attracted to, you know, often people will be sitting outside or sitting with the door open and they'll be enjoying a glass of wine or a beer. And they really like the fermenting smell, and they're different than from the true fruit flies that we call Tephrididae. Those are attracted to nice, healthy fruits. But once you take that fruit off the tree and put it on a fruit basket, and it starts to rot and decay, these fruit flies that are in the kitchens, their larvae like to feed on the yeasts and bacteria that are growing on the wounded fruit or somewhere like that. That's also why they're attracted to alcohol, because they cue in on the fermentation,
right,
and they eat the microorganisms.
Right. Of course, there's a joke among gardeners, you know, that goes something like, you know, where do tomato hornworms come from? And then the answer is they're provided in every packet of tomato seeds, you know. Because, I mean, it seems like it, right? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, if you're not there to see it, you really, you know, we're really kind of concerned with our own things, and we don't really see these things enter, and they're so small, and it's only until you get a huge population or a very large insect that you really notice them.
Yeah. Spiders, the diversity of spiders in my own home and in general out in the garden as well, amazing. Sizes, shapes, colors, patterns on their bodies. I mean, the webs, the styles of webs they weave or don't, I mean, unbelievable complexity and it could be a lifetime of fascination. So in the home, who are you finding and who's common? And do some of these live in our homes purposefully? They like our homes?
Yeah, definitely. So there are two general types of spiders. There's going to be the web spiders and the ground or hunting spiders. the two of the most common spider groups we found were the Fulcidae, which are it's called cellar spiders, sometimes called daddy long legs, even though they're not the true daddy long legs that you'd see outside.
Oh.
And also the cobweb spiders. And both these groups of spiders live in webs and are very common in homes. They survive for long periods. They're very well adapted to living in dry environments and living for a long time without food. And so they can be opportunistic and wait for any of these accidental introductions or just other arthropods that are living in the homes. And then the ground spiders and the hunting spiders, they're wandering around everywhere, and they may happen to come into a hole in the home and just wander inside. They're also pretty good at surviving, so they may make it out more often than some of the other arthropods. And they will opportunistically feed on things that are in the homes, but they probably prefer to be outside where there's more food.
Now, if I'm correct, I read the study in January, I believe, or February, so my memory might not serve me perfectly, but I don't think you went in cellars, basements extensively, nor all the way into attics and spent a lot of time up in attics. You kind of did just across the threshold or something. Is that correct?
Yeah, so we went in full basements that were easy to access, but crawl spaces and attics we only sampled very limitedly. We went to kind of keep an eye on our safety, and crawling under a home or crawling up and being up in an attic in the summer was pretty brutal. And so we did have a more limited sampling for those two situations.
And yet all this diversity, and the reason I just thought of that was because I was thinking of spiders, and I was thinking if I were to go into my attic or I were to go into my cellar, the diversity immediately increases with them in particular, among other things. There's a lot going on down there and up there.
Yeah, attics not as much as you would think, but there certainly are things. I think it depends on where you live, probably.
Yes.
Here in North Carolina, the heat is very extreme.
Yes, I'm thinking of this time of year when we're just in that sort of spring, you know, where it's above freezing, but it's not too hot up there yet. And what's happening up there is that sometimes there seems to be like things that get, I don't know, in the vents or whatever, and they've like hatched, you know, like right now we have a lot of Asian lady beetles in my area.
Yep.
Everybody is like consumed by Asian lady beetles.
Oh, yeah. And those things are really just overwintering.
Right.
And they prefer our homes as a nice overwinter site to shelter them from the winter. Now, as far as the basements, you know, those environments are more like caves. They have a lot more moisture and organic matter than our regular part of the house.
Right.
And so that does support more types of arthropods. And so things like millipedes and sow bugs and even some mollusks, not arthropods, but some various groups that other predators and other groups may feed on that can't survive in the home.
I think I have some kinds of, like, crickety things in my basement.
Yeah, the camel crickets.
Yes,
they were very common.
It, yes.
And we probably could have found more of them if we were able to go under our crawl spaces more, because sometimes it's tough to catch them from just the entrance of the crawl space.
Right.
But we have them very common here, and they do basically, you know, you may find them on a first floor occasionally or a finished basement, but they really do like to live in that cave-like environment where they've evolved.
Yeah. Stink bugs, so-called stink bugs, and I'm using that, it's sort of a generic, loose term, imprecise, but that's something else I get a lot of emails about, stink bugs. And right now, in my own home, what I would call stink bugs are all over the damn place because, again, they seem to be hatching out at this time of year. I'm getting, you know, them appearing inside the house. What about those?
Yeah, so along with ladybugs, ladybugs are one of the major beetles that overwinters as adults.
Yes.
Then you get a few other groups of insects that really survive the winter as an adult.
Not hatching. They were dormant.
Yeah, so they're the bugs, stink bugs, box elder bugs. Down here we have kudzu bugs. These overwinter as adults, and in nature they would find some bark or some kind of hole in a tree or somewhere to aggregate and stay warm for the winter, even in a leaf litter. But our homes are really nice places if they're able to get in for them to do so as well. And there's also some flies, cluster flies, and a few other small flies.
Oh, yes.
We'll do that.
Yes.
And also even wasps. So paper wasps and hornets have an overwintering queen that that when it starts to warm up in the spring, people in buildings or homes where they've been resting will start to notice a lot more of these wasps flying around the building.
We have about 3 minutes left. I want to ask you about a couple of other creatures. What in the world is a silverfish? Because it is the most curious creature, and how can it even really be a thing? and I have them, and sometimes they're in the cellar mostly, but sometimes they come up into the downstairs bathroom area, and I just, they're fascinating looking little things.
Yeah.
What are they?
I like them. I think they're really cute. They're really called silverfish because they've got iridescent scales all over their bodies. They are a very primitive type of insect. They are a true insect, but they are one of the most ancient groups. They are completely wingless. They actually molt throughout their entire life, which is very different than most insects. They have strange mating courtships, and they eat a lot of weird things. I've kept them in a jar with just some tissue paper, just as a little substrate, and they'll eat holes in that. They'll eat leather and glue, and just very odd. And many of them are very very used to living with people, and some are brought in from other countries and such. But they're harmless, but some people are a little freaked out by them.
Yes, very different. And the fact that you said that they're primitive, that's what how I would have described them, again, just being a layperson and not knowing that. That's how, and looking at them, they seem primitive.
Yeah, and it's not very scientific to say primitive, but it's a good way to communicate
it. It's okay. I'm not a scientist.
Yeah, exactly. So.
Yeah. What are you thinking about doing next? What did this kind of get you and maybe your colleagues, of course, your co-authors of the study, thinking about doing next? What's on the horizon?
Yeah, so we have a lot of things lined up. We are actually in the process of getting a paper out about the green space and kind of some economic socioeconomic levels and differences in the diversity of what we're finding in the homes. We are also sampling smaller subsets of homes from around the world. So we've already have samples from San Francisco, from two areas in Peru, both a jungle and a city in Peru, and Sweden. And we're going to be traveling, my colleagues especially, are going to be traveling to other places in the world and trying to compare what we're finding. We're also going to be looking at the microbiome, so the bacteria and the microorganisms that these things may have, that they may be moving around. And there's a lot of great research avenues looking at how these things travel in between homes and in between areas of the world. There's a lot of possibilities.
Very, very interesting. Well, I will give, with the transcript of this the show, I will give everyone the link to read the study. And thank you, Dr. Matt Bertone of NCSU, for making the time and also just for the research that went into arthropods of the great indoors. I love it. Thank you so much.
Great. No problem. Thank you.
Okay. I hope I'll talk to all of the rest of you again soon, like, hey, how about next week? Don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Stitcher or iTunes. Find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or facebook.com/awaytogarden. And happy bug hunting meantime.
Away to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.